And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions that you might have, especially considering the time of year. If you've got a new piece of tech and aren't quite sure how it's going to fit into your life, we may be able to help. Mac guru Joel Brovelite is with us today. We have Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Asap here, easy for me to say. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and PIR, we'll have Jeff Litterk on the line later. You can call, text, tweet, or email your questions, or simply swing by our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio and post your comment or question there. I've already started a thread for today's program, and it talks a little bit about how to set up your new dot that you got for Christmas. Maybe you got one of those as a gift or for yourself. Don't be shy. Post a question or comment there. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. Is the number you can call if you'd like to call into the show today and ask a question. You're on Twitter, at KentSDPB is the way to get a hold of us there. The email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday at sdpb.org. And rolling out today and really into the new year, a way to text this program as we become in the moment, 956-SDPB, that's 956-7372, and just put that in your contacts and shoot us a text whenever you've got a question for the show or a topic idea. We would love to hear from you at any time from your mobile device. That's 956-SDPB. We've got a lot of topics to get to today. We have a question right off the bat, and really this is what we're doing today. We're just kind of taking questions from folks and would like to hear your questions about the tech that maybe you received for Christmas and other things. So we are going to get into that. We're going to also talk about the Russian hacking information that's coming out. There's a new DHS report that Jeff Litterk has, we're going to talk about that today, as well as there's a murder investigation that might possibly be aided by Amazon Alexa. And Joel, have you been following this? You've got a lot of these dots and Alexas in your house, right?
I know. It's kind of embarrassing how many I have. I have more than I have rooms. No, that's not quite true, but it's close. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, although kind of not surprising. We'll kind of outline real quick what's going on. There is a murder case in, or an alleged murder case in, I believe...
Bentonville, Arkansas.
Arkansas is what I was going to say. And what happened, I won't go through the details, but at the end, it turns out they're investigating it for murder, and they want Amazon to give over any recorded audio that that particular device may have recorded that night. Now, the real deal is the device doesn't turn on unless you doesn't start recording unless you use the wake word, which is either Amazon Echo or Alexa, depending on whatever they have it set to. Mm-hmm. However, it's been pointed out that if you have these devices and if you have an Amazon Echo or even the Google Home, which is kind of a new competing device, you know, it can sometimes wake up when you say, you know, election, which sounds kind of like Alexa. So sometimes it will record little blips of conversations. Now, those recordings are sent to Amazon directly because really... And I tried to explain this to my daughter. Voice recognition for all of your devices relies on the internet. When you ask Siri or Alexa a question, it doesn't do that on your device. It actually sends each word of that question to a database somewhere else, and then that database compares those words with words it knows, figures out the sentence, and sends you the answer back. You know, in less than a second. So. Good voice recognition requires the internet to do this. And to do that, it records these little snippets of the question. So the people that are doing the investigation want to get their hands on these recordings just to see if there's anything to be learned. And, of course, Amazon is refusing to do this because it would be basically suicide if Amazon said, okay, yeah, we'll give you all the recordings that were done on that device because Amazon, more than anyone, really, traffics in privacy because everybody knows about Amazon where you buy you know, that last minute thing that you want to get here tomorrow, whether it's a book or a CD or whatever it is. But Amazon does a tremendous amount of business in storage and online web service and hosting. And that's a big deal for even large companies that use Amazon as their back end.
So if they're so concerned about privacy, why did they quickly give over everything else about that account, the browsing history and what they bought recently and all that other stuff that goes along with their Amazon account? Why give that kind of information to the police but not the audio files?
Well, I assume that they, because the audio files don't necessarily fall under a particular already decided law or warrant, whereas, you know, a warrant was probably produced for information like purchase history and, things done with a credit card and possibly emails. I'm not sure what all they got. Mm-hmm. But most of that stuff is covered, in either standing laws or precedent. And can be asked for and demanded. But things like audio recordings using devices like this is kind of the first case where that we know of where this is actually relevant. So, well, hard to tell where it's going to go, but, I'd venture a guess that they're probably not going to be able to, not going to give it up.
I mean,
and, you know, it's really arguable whether that would actually be valuable or not. Clearly, they want to get everything they can, and I understand that. But, I imagine Amazon's going to fight this as long as possible. So your question, why did they give up the other stuff? They probably had to based on existing law.
Okay. So could you have imagined this a few years ago, that people were going to willfully install listening devices in all the rooms of their homes?
Yeah, I can imagine it maybe as far back as 8 to 10 years, when we started seeing webcams on computers. You know, this is just me. I don't know if a lot of people imagine that, but I really imagined that was going to be how we were going to communicate with people and things and be able to, keep an eye on your kid or your cat or whatever it is. I just found it so useful, which is one of the reasons I'm kind of an early adopter for any of this smart home technology. I just find it very convenient and easy. I've got nothing to hide personally. A lot of people would say, well, just because you don't have anything to hide doesn't give them the right to, access that information. While that may be true or not true, I think the benefits outweigh, the possible downsides. I can attest to the benefits myself.
Well, here's a non-benefit. We have a listener in Sioux City that's listening through their Amazon Echo Dot at this moment.
I know what he's going to say. I know what they're going to say.
When you say,
every time we say it, it wakes up.
We say that
and
word.
And asks you a question, yes.
Right, and then the audio from the show dips down, and then, it interrupts our program.
It sure does.
So.
Although I will say, there have been software updates for the, we'll just say device, so we don't ruin their listening fun. There have been updates to the device that have made it, I would say, 100% better than even a year ago. I was noticing that yesterday as I was listening to public radio on my Echo Dot, and there was, of course, tons of coverage about what we're talking about right now, and not one of them tripped up my Dot, even though the audio was coming from it. Now, that could have been where it was positioned. It could have been that's a slightly newer device than some of the other Echo devices that I have, but I was surprised that, a dozen times it didn't get tripped up on the trigger word that I had. So I definitely know that they're working on that and trying to fix that part of it. So while that's annoying and I've experienced it, I imagine that's going to happen less and less.
Can you set the trigger word to be something completely different?
Not.
Like cucumber or?
You can choose those three. And I imagine they'll widen that out. Those three are Amazon Echo and Alexa. So here we are waking it up one more time.
Sorry about that.
No matter what you have, we're going to wake up your device. I imagine that's because their voice recognition on that is so good, and I am not an Amazon fan by any stretch of the imagination, but their voice recognition on this is so good that they really need to keep it as narrow as possible to make sure that it works as flawlessly as it really does.
So his question is, he's got three of the Echo Dots for Christmas. One is in the family room, one is in the kitchen, one is in the bedroom. He's been discovering all sorts of cool stuff that it does, the built-in Easter eggs about asking about getting a joke, I guess, told you, or some fun facts about it being National Bacon Day, or
that wears off, by the way.
It does. Okay.
Those things wear off.
So he's wondering if we can recommend a couple of moderately priced speaker options. While he'd love to have the dough to buy a Sonos or something like that, he's looking for something for about half that price, and he's wondering if we have any suggestions. He's been looking at the Jam system. He says it's got decent sound, $150 or so for the Symphony speaker, but also the question about Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, which one's better? And I'm not sure.
I don't believe it even syncs at this point via Wi-Fi audio.
Yeah, I think the Wi-Fi
think it's
feature.
Just Bluetooth. Yeah. It's probably coming because I know that they have a big rollout for the coordination with the Sonos system, which is a Wi-Fi system, at least primarily. So that may be coming. My personal opinion of this is to get a wired speaker. And this is just based on my current experience with the device. It does sync with the Bluetooth devices very well. I've used my full-size Echo for audio streaming from my phone, and it works great. However, if for some reason your Bluetooth audio goes out of sync, you then have to go resync it and set it up, which for a stationary speaker device is kind of annoying. You kind of just want it to always work. So I would, and not only that, getting a wired speaker rather than a wireless speaker is going to cost you, you know, maybe a quarter of the cost. So I really would recommend getting a wired speaker unless, you know, that where you have the device is completely prohibitive. But I seriously doubt it. And one of the best parts about the device is it's small and you don't move it around. It's just stationary in one room. So it's very much like a knickknack you might place on your shelf. Hook it up to a speaker system. It might even be your home stereo or whatever it is, and you just kind of forget about it. So that'd be my recommendation. I honestly wish Amazon or a third party would come out with a good speaker that you can kind of put underneath it that would kind of lessen the footprint that you might have to have with that. But of course, if you're talking about spending $100 or more for a speaker system, you might as well just get the full-size Amazon Echo, because $100 more than a dot, you basically have that. And I really think the speaker system in the full-size Amazon Echo is really good. So that's my long-winded recommendation.
Amos, you're a dot user as well, correct?
Yeah, I've got a dot and an Echo.
Okay. And do you have these hooked up to an external stereo or Bluetooth speaker or anything like that?
I don't today. The dot sits in my office, and it's right at my desk. I don't use that very much for any sort of audio streaming. I just use it for any sort of answer that it might provide back on questions that I ask. I actually am a Sonos fan. I have Sonos in multiple rooms, and I think that is probably overkill for something that you'd want to do with the dot or with the Echo, but you know, it really depends on what you want to do and how far you want that sound to go. If you're going to use it for a audio streaming device, you are going to want to get something that is going to be good quality, have a speaker that projects farther than just the Echo speaker itself. And I agree with Joel that you know, the smallest footprint with good quality sound is just going to be to get a full size Echo device, and that will that'll accomplish both things. And then you can put that also in another room. So it really depends on what your ultimate purpose is. You know, the Sonos system is going to be if you want to play that music throughout your entire house or something like that. And then I am not aware of a Wi-Fi system which would work with the Amazon systems, because they you know, they're meant to Bluetooth to something. And again, Bluetooth versus Wi-Fi is going to be a distance limitation on how far that speaker can be from the device that's actually streaming the audio.
Okay, got it. We're going to take a quick break. I'll tell you, when we come back, this dovetails perfectly into something I wanted to talk about on today's show, which was extending the reach, I guess, of listening to SDPB radio onto other devices or getting us on in alternative ways. And that's going to work perfectly. So let's take a quick break, take a breather, and when we come back, I'll talk about a little blog post that I wrote, and we'll go on from there. But folks, we would like you to call us, text us, tweet us, email us, whatever you'd like to do. Midday@sdpb.org is the email address. Our text number, and go ahead and put this in your contacts, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. And you can text us at any time. And, of course, 800-524-3604 is our regular phone number if you'd like to give us a call, and send us a tweet at KentSDPB if you'd like. Follow the Facebook post, facebook.com/techradio, for more information as well. We like to post things there, as I will do during the show. We'll be right back after this with more. And welcome back to Tech Radio with the Computer Guys. We've got Joel Brovelite in Sioux Falls, our Mac guru, on the line today. Our, I guess, our security officer, Amos Aesop, is here. I'm gonna appoint you to that position, Amos. I hope you're okay with that.
I am.
And from the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us as well. He's got some news on the latest in the Russian hacking situation, and we're going to talk to him about that in just a few minutes. You can call, text, or tweet us. We've gone through that a couple of times, but facebook.com/techradio is a great way to get a hold of us. I just posted a blog article I wrote this morning that talks about listening to SDPB radio in alternate ways. And one of those is, of course, using the internet to listen to SDPB radio. Many people do that on their browser, but there are other ways through the app. And really, it's about enjoying the sound in the way that you want to do it. And we just talked about a couple of those ways, Bluetooth speakers, wired speakers, etc. So Joel, when you listen to SDPB with your dot, do you say I want to listen to? Do you put the call letters in from like Sioux Falls then?
Yeah, KCSD? That's what you need to do. You know, and I'm so trained on how to do this that I haven't actually tried to say Alexa, play South Dakota Public Radio, which doesn't work. Or at least the last time I checked, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say play KUSD. Which are the call letters for it.
Oh, okay, yep.
And then it just plays it. And I think that's not necessarily a limitation of the Echo, but more a limitation of the service that they get it from, which is, I believe, iHeartRadio. It could be TuneIn Radio, which are two kind of internet radio streaming applications that work with the Echo. So I don't think it's necessarily Amazon's fault. So if you have trouble doing that, just use the call letters from your local South Dakota Public Radio, which in our neck of the woods is KUSD, and that's all you have to do. Boy, oh boy, I used to listen to terrestrial radio only, and then if I wanted to listen to, say, Chicago Public Radio or Minnesota Public Radio, I would use streaming for that. Now I'm 100% streaming for everything just because, again, I have these devices in every room, and not every room, most rooms, and I can just call for it, and it will start playing. I can hit, I can tell it to stop. I can set a timer, ask what time it is. All of this hands free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I can't say enough good about it.
We have a listener, Adam from Hot Springs, on the line. And Adam, you've got a question about the Echo. Go ahead.
Yes, my wife bought one of these for my 97-year-old mother-in-law, who's part of seeing, and she wants her lots of things so that she could listen to books on the radio or on this device.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a capability to do that with an Echo?
Oh yeah, there absolutely is. One of the ways, or the main way to do it, is to use Audible, which is also an Amazon product that, well, it didn't used to be, but they were purchased by Amazon, and it's easily the largest distributor of audiobooks in existence. So likely if you were going to buy digital copies of audiobooks, this is where you'd probably get it anyway. You can sign up for a monthly subscription, which will allow you basically one book a month for a low price. I think that's kind of valuable because a lot of the books you might buy are $20, but the subscription's $15. So it kind of saves you money if you know you're going to be buying a bunch. And the service also allows you to listen to a big library of kind of quote-unquote free audiobooks. Most of it's like publicly available, but it kind of keeps it in one source. You do have to have access to the computer to set it up, But once you've set it up with the Echo or Echo Dot or whatever it is, you can then just ask for it and say, Amazon, play, you know, Moby Dick from my library, and it will start it, and it will remember where you are, and next time it will resume from that spot. Pretty fantastic, actually.
Well, great. Thanks for the help. Appreciate it.
We appreciate the call, Adam. Thanks so much. That's something that I hadn't really thought of, this being an assistive technology.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's 100% there yet for, people with, certain needs, because it does require an interface to a mobile device or a computer to really get running. And, of course, because it's by Amazon, ideally what they want you to do is run everything through the Amazon store. So there does need to be some access to a regular device, although that's not necessarily a limitation. But for things like checking the time or setting a timer or playing radio or finding out what the latest news is or how the traffic is or how the weather is, I could go on and on, it is very useful. So as long as you've got a support system to kind of get it up and running and keep it updated, I think it's a fantastic device for that.
And you mentioned setting it up, and that is something that you go in to your account and allow apps, basically?
Yes. And your head can kind of start spinning, and when you go look for the apps that are available for the, we call them apps, but you never actually see them like your phone. They're just, they're called, I forget what they're called.
There's kind of interfaces then.
Yeah. Basically, it's an interface for skills. Yes, thank you. There's tons of them. I really use, much like my mobile phone, I really wind up using the same, four or five, and the rest of them, unless they really blow me out of the water or somebody tells me about it, I don't even go looking. And I think that's what most people do. But, just like apps on the phone, I suppose there's lots of things to explore. So, yes, to do those, you need to have access to it. And it's mostly done through your phone, through a mobile device. Doing it on the standalone computer is actually kind of hard and in some cases impossible. So you do need to have a mobile device, whether that's a Android phone or tablet or a iPhone or similar device.
Okay. Getting back to listening to SDPB again, I just want to wrap this up. The reason that this kind of came about, or is the increased emphasis on it, is with the retirement of Owen DeYoung today, which was, I got to tell you, it's very touching, the end of the show today. I listened all morning and certainly want to wish Owen the best in his retirement and remind folks that the classical music will continue on SDPB Radio on our alternate channel. And for you, Joel, you would say listen to KUSD HD2, and then it will bring up our 24-hour classical channel that's only available on HD radios, which is kind of the hard part for most people. Most radios are not HD capable. So
yeah, but basically, if you have any computer device or anything, you're good to go. So don't let that scare you off. It's very easy. Basically, if you have any computer that's newer than 15 years old, which is everybody listening, I'm sure, you have a way to listen to that stream. So it's not super complicated. You can do it.
Yeah, and we try to make it easy with there's a couple of apps. The NPR News app is one of them. Our SDPB app is another easy way to listen. But then, a lot you're just thinking, well, I don't want to listen on my phone. And that's where the Bluetooth or the hooking up to a speaker system or whatever helps. It can make that sound quality a lot better for you without having to go out and buy an HD radio. I mean, you may already have one, and that's great, but they are a little bit hard to find. They can be expensive. I was looking at a roundup of some of the best tabletop radios from 2016, and there are some neat devices out there. Some of these radios are Wi-Fi connected devices themselves. They have Bluetooth built in. They have different apps that you can run in the radio themselves, as well as be an HD radio or just a plain radio to boot. So there's some interesting fusion, I guess, going on of listening devices, of radios, and the web. And of course, Amos is going, well, Sonos has been doing this for a long time. That's true. But it's starting to get out into the marketplace even more. And it was interesting looking at those and looking at the features. It's a neat deal. Anyway, I detailed a few of those ways of listening to us in a blog piece that was posted this morning. I just linked that on the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Certainly want to encourage you to listen to STPB Radio whenever you can. And there's a couple of ways that we're trying to make it easy for you to listen to the regular stream or the classical 24 stream. We'd like you to do that. So an excellent way to do it. We have a listener question. Scott writes, says, I'm a cheap bugger from Sioux Falls who's wondering about backing up the family photos. We have a family member with Amazon Prime and several Google accounts. Is Google Photo or Amazon Prime the best way to back up the pictures? Can you cover the pros and cons of each? I'm not super familiar with the Google side of things. I do have Amazon set up to back up my photos. And I would say the interface is a little bit clunky, but it works. The great pro for Amazon is it's free. If you're an Amazon Prime member, unlimited backup of family photos is one of their things.
Yeah, it's included.
It's included.
And yearly.
As Joel mentioned earlier, AWS or Amazon Web Services is huge. I mean, they are a global leader in cloud.
Might be considered one of the best, if not the best, kind of back-end service in existence.
Right. So we're talking enterprise-grade stuff all the way through, and that's where you'd be putting your photos. And so it's a service you're already paying for. And as we found out earlier in the show, you know, Amazon takes your security seriously. So I'm not sure about cons. Do either of you folks or even Jeff, do you use Google to back up your photos at all?
I actually do use Google.
Okay.
Mainly because unless you need more space, you can get quite a bit of free space without having to pay. And I actually paid $2 with taxes and some change to get 100 gig a month. So it's not that bad, but that stores everything. I back all my important documents and photos and stuff up using that space. The nice thing on an Android phone, if that's your primary, is I have it set to auto backup. As soon as I take a picture, and if there's Wi-Fi or battery available, it auto backs it up. I don't have to manually back up the photos at all. And then I can rearrange them however I want on Google Photos. So, into different albums and stuff. So for me, because I'm a big Google user and I'm paying for the storage to do all the backups, it just kind of seamless for me. And then on my other cameras, I just drop and drag the photos right up into Google, and that works. Either one is going to be about the same in terms of reliability and security, either Google or Amazon. I would say this: don't delete your old photos and expect them always to be up there. Stuff can always happen. Accounts could get mixed up, or billing could get mixed up. It's a backup only. It shouldn't be the only place you put your photos. But because I'm a big Android user and Google user, Google's just made more sense for me. So
sure, I use Flickr a lot as well. I have use a pro account both at work and at home. And I like to back up my photos there. You can make them private if you'd like, or I like sharing a lot of my photos as well. So there are other photo sharing options as well. I've also relied very heavily this year on Dropbox, probably more than I ever have. And it's mainly moving photos around from different devices to different devices, or from different computers to on different networks or whatever. But I've been using Dropbox a lot as well.
One of the things I will say, at least in the Google world, it's very easy to share. You don't have to move them. You don't have to move between services. If I actually want to share a photo or email a photo to somebody, I just attach, like from Gmail, directly to the drive, and it sends a link and automatically sets up the sharing. Either public or only people that have the direct link can get to it. And that's true of any file on Google Drive. You can share just about anything, including spreadsheets and documents. But I don't know about Amazon, but on the Google side, there's no copy. You just, you know, go to the file, for you are share and share it. It's and then they get a link, and you're not actually trying to mail around humongous photo files and stuff. So, and then anyone with that link can go out and view that file at any time.
I'll say that my son was married this spring and hired a professional photographer and got back a Google document or a shared drive or whatever with a link that says, here's your photos. And that was very easy to use. As a parent, I could, rifle through that fairly quickly and download the photos that I wanted to save. And I was just interested to see that they would use Google in that way and exactly in the way you just mentioned.
If you are a Google user and you're using Gmail, it's so integrated that actually when you attach photos stuff, it asks you, do you wish to put it on the drive and share it through the drive so you're not sending big files around? I mean, it's baked into everything, all the different Google services and stuff. Google Drive is. Microsoft has their Drive solution too on OneDrive, which can be kind of the same thing. And of course, you got iCloud, but the sharing and the integration on Google is paramount, especially if you have an Android phone and stuff like that. So
how much storage do you get, I guess, for free? You're paying a couple of bucks a month for 100 gig, you said. Yeah, what's the normal allotment, I guess?
Now, sort of things also don't count against that 100 gig. But I'm thinking it's 30 gig is free right now.
Okay.
And some photos, especially the ones that are auto-loaded off my Android, I won't guarantee this, are free. They don't actually count against the 100. There are some exceptions on that, and you can go out to Google and take a look, and it's pretty well laid out. But and once you buy, it actually tells you how much you're using and how much is free, so to speak. So I have an Android phone. The photos are auto-backed up, so that stuff is free and doesn't count against that. But my other photos and all the documents, of course, do. So and it ties in with Gmail and all the services. So when you buy, say, 100 gig, that includes all your Gmail mail, that includes everything you do through Google, anything you store is in that one big pool. So that 30 gig free also includes, if you're using Gmail, your email and stuff like that also.
Very good. Want to remind folks that we're taking questions today about technology you may have gotten over the holidays for Christmas, and or maybe you saw something advertised and you have a question about it. Will it work this way, or can I use it for that? We'd like you to join the discussion. Facebook.com/techradio is a great place to go. It's the storefront there is always open, and we're always happy to answer questions there. Our phone number today, 800-524-3604. And you can email your suggestions or your questions to our guests today. We have Joel on the line. We have Amos and Jeff here to assist you. That email address, midday, MIDDAY, at sdpb.org. Probably the last time you're going to have a chance to use that. I think this is the last show that we'll be using that email address on. But midday at sdpb.org. And, of course, send those tweets to me at KentSDPB. And we'll get that on the show today in our final segment, which is going to come up right after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio, our final show of this year. We'll be back in the new year next week, in fact. January 6th will be the second half of the new In the Moment program on SDPB Radio, and glad to be palling along with that. Big changes in the new year, and happy to be a part of it here at Tech Radio. We have a couple of questions that have come over the transom during the break. We have a text that says, "Is there a simple way to remove Cortana from my laptop?" And I'm going to throw Amos and Jeff a lifeline here and ask, Cortana is the personal assistant interface that can kind of get in the way of you trying to get some quick things done on your Windows PC. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So is there a way to, I guess, disable or get rid of that interface?
Well, yeah, you can't get rid of it. All you can do is disable it and turn it off, and it's pretty simple. Of course, Microsoft goes and kind of changes it a little bit, and depending if you have the anniversary edition or not, and what patch levels, but it's not that hard, and there's actually a couple of ways. What you want to do is actually, the easiest option is just launch it from the search bar, and then on the left pane when it's up, just click in the settings, and one of the first options, you should be able to actually turn it off. It's a little slider, and then that should get rid of it, hopefully, unless Microsoft reactivates it through a patch, which they've been known to do. But like I said, it's fairly easy once again. If you do a quick Google on disable Cortana Windows 10, there's simple instructions with screenshots on how to turn it off. So
okay, very good. We have a comment on the line. Curtis is with us today. Where are you from, Curtis?
Oh, I'm from around the Winter area.
Oh, cool. You got a comment today?
Yeah, I just I did something recently that I thought some older listeners might be interested in. I found a way to connect my iPod to an old console stereo. And, some console stereos have great sound. Some people are into rebuilding them. Some people really get into, the higher-end ones that have tube amps in them and stuff.
Sure.
And I just wanted to suggest, I don't know, maybe if someone still had an old one laying around or something, they could maybe find someone that was a little tech savvy and also connect Bluetooth to it. Works great, sounds great, and it's kind of fun in a retro way.
Sure. Did you use an auxiliary input on that to wire your iPod to it, or did you have to actually go in and hack some wires?
No, actually, there is an auxiliary input, and I did it a few different ways. At first, I just took the back off, found the right connectors, and drilled a little hole where the records would be stored. You couldn't really see it, so I could put the jack through it and have the iPod inside. But then I noticed that sometimes it's easier to just have the iPod laying on top with the top closed, and so I just fed out the auxiliary cable, and so it just looks like a cable coming up from the back and connected to the iPod on top. But either way, it's kind of fun to do.
Sure, absolutely.
Plus, if you like LPs, that's kind of making a comeback. You have the option to flip back and forth depending on what your LP collection is like.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I probably should have included that in my blog post this morning about taking stereo equipment that you already have and hooking it up to modern devices to be able to stream audio.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, yeah.
Or listen to MP3s or whatever you'd like to do, whatever you'd like to listen to. Podcasts would be a great way to do that. And I bet they do sound great on some of those old console stereo systems.
Yeah, they do, and I believe it or not, I found an old console stereo, a little smaller, not hi-fi, but I was able to hook it up, and I think I paid $20 for it. So there you go.
And you're saving something from the landfill, so that's
well, not quite that bad.
Well, yeah. So what could be better than that? Hey, we appreciate the comment, Curtis. Thanks for listening. And have a great 2017. It's going to be a wild ride. As I mentioned, we'll be back on the air in January on the 6th. That's actually going to be our only program in January. We're going to be bumped by the inauguration of the new president on January 20th. So good luck with that. But we'll be off celebrating in other ways. And January 6th, your opportunity to listen to us again on the air and on your app or online as well. Jeff Litterick, I want to get to you today for sure. We want to talk. You just got a white paper in, or it isn't a white paper, I guess it just got coded a color that you can now talk about on the air. What new information do you have for us on the Russian hacking situation that I guess President Obama just imposed some sanctions based on that report, correct?
Yeah, I'll describe a little bit about it and some of the things you should probably be watching out for. Because okay. The Russians, one of the things in the paper is they target about everybody. They're not as focused as the Chinese. And we talked about this in the past. The Chinese actually have a military unit for cyber warfare that does a lot of industrial espionage and stuff. The Russians kind of go after everybody. And they actually have, from the report, multiple actors/agencies in Russia kind of almost competing against each other to hack people. And they have a little bit different flavor, each one. But we've talked about a lot of this stuff before, but the way they do this is it kind of takes it to the next level. And what I mean by that is they use the same techniques a lot of hackers, other hackers use. We've talked about in the past where they do drive-by web attacks on unprotected browsers and drop malware on your machine. That's one of the agencies. The other agency does targeted phishing attacks where they actually send you bad emails and try to get you to a bad website to enter your username and password. Now, this is not anything new, but to the degree they go about it, it's kind of interesting that most people may not expect. People may have gotten those emails, you know, the help desk is sending you an email, please, if you don't want your email disabled, please log in and reset your password, right?
Right.
Those are pretty easy. This one is actually very targeted, using insider information to the company on who's sending it, how it's due, and it takes you to websites that look like the real website. If you log into your company's webmail, you would not be able to tell the difference of the Russian site from your company's webmail. It will look exactly the same. In fact, the exact domain names used are so close that unless you're paying very, very close attention, you probably won't notice the difference. They do tricks like a trick on a domain name. For example, you go to www.cnn.com to go to CNN. Well, they had set up their website that looks just like CNN. Perfectly to the T, just like CNN, at www.cnm.com, and then send you the link. And if you don't notice, even with HTTP and SSL certificates, they'll look just fine because they control that website. And you enter any information, they have you. And then they redirect you back into your own website, so once you're logged in, you never realize you were just hacked. They take very targeted, and they actually do multiple stages. The first, in the case of political parties, the first Russian agency came along and dropped malware and got inside and just basically did reconnaissance, so that the next agency came along with the targeted phishing to grab usernames and passwords. They knew all the insider information already about the company, who was doing what, and they could use that to leverage in their email campaign, they're targeted to get you to their fake website. And then once you did that, they would install malware tools and remote access tools and basically hop from machine to machine through your whole network and dig through. The tools are not different than any other hacker, and in fact, mainly ransomware. It's just to the degree that you must be aware of your surroundings, so to speak. If you click anything, even it looks like an internal email to you, you should never trust it unless you verify the domain name is exactly correct. And unfortunately, the bigger the company's name they use for a domain name, the easier it becomes for people to make a small change. Also, a lot of people have been using short URLs a lot. You see them on Twitter all the time. The Russians use that to get you to that domain that looks almost exactly the same. And they will copy your company's website verbatim onto their web servers, so that it is very, very difficult to tell. And they target everybody. Believe me, if you've been in business of any type of any big, they probably have targeted you. They actually target universities quite often to get into research and stuff like that. So the Chinese, while they do a lot of economic stuff, the Russians do political, economic, research, just about everything you can think of under the sun trying to get in. And it is very targeted and very sophisticated.
So, Jeff, the takeaway for our listeners is, well, first of all, if you happen to click a link to one of these websites, and so how do you stop the website from doing something bad to your computer? Is it finding security holes that you may have in a browser or in an Adobe Flash thing, or is it what's happening that infects me that gets
right.
me?
The best way for that is always to keep your machine updated, right? They have to use existing security holes to install malware unless you download something off the website manually and click please run this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which they do sometimes in people to run because they look like an internal company website saying, hey, here's this new version of the internal accounting app that you actually do run, and we'll say, please, you know, you need to update it, and it will actually be malware. I mean, they get so deep into the research that they know what internal apps you're running and everything so that they will use the correct terminology you use in your internal organization. A lot of the gotcha people have learned over time on phishing and to spot bad emails still applies, but you have to be even more diligent. Just looking at an SSL, making sure you have SSL encryption is no guarantee. You really have to scrutinize that domain name exactly and make sure it is exactly correct. It's not a .net versus a .com. It's not an N as in Nancy being replaced with an M, right, as in Mary, mm-hmm. in part of the name and stuff like that. So it's – and one of the things for the home user is what the – professionals, so to speak, are using today is what all the hackers use tomorrow. They learn from each other. They realize how easy it is to copy a website like your banking website and set up and make it look exactly like the real website on their servers and to trick you. So as this the techniques they use become more public, especially the reconnaissance and how they trick users into getting to these websites, everybody will be using the same tricks soon. They're learning from each other, so everyone has to kind of – it's the next part of the arms race. It's stepping up the game to really pay really close attention to domain names and what you're using, keep your systems patched, of course, and realize they were targeting systems. And this is what a lot of people kind of make a mistake is a lot of websites get hacked and stuff like that, and they feel, well, they're targeting information and database systems. In this case, the Russians were targeting people. They were looking up you specifically and targeting you and trying to find your weaknesses to exploit to get your username and password, for example. They weren't targeting computer systems and vulnerabilities. They were targeting the people running them. They were the normal users sitting at the desk. That was their target. And they wanted to learn everything as much about you as possible to be able to target you individually to gain access to the company as a whole.
Sure. So the takeaways, again, are one, keep everything updated and patched if you can, and two, don't. This is the age-old thing, don't click on links in emails?
Or even other website links, text messages, Twitter messages. They were using all of them. It just wasn't email anymore.
Okay, very good. So be careful out there. That's unfortunately all the time we have for today's show. We appreciate the wonderful questions today, the calls and the texts. Thank you so much. I want to thank my panelists as well for taking the time out of their day to be with us and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app. Or at sdpb.org. Just go there and click on listen. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a wonderful new year.